Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and Packers News. I am Ryan Wood alongside my colleague and co-host Tom Silverstein. And Tom, it's rivalry week, and it's a fairly big one. The Packers have gotten right of their course on a four-game winning streak after that debacle in the opener. And now they go into Chicago to play the team that probably is, for them, the team to beat in this NFC North.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I still want to see what Minnesota does. I still think Minnesota's a pretty good team. They're kind of up and down. But Chicago is really their first difficult or most difficult game that they'll face to this point in the NFC North. Detroit wasn't that big of a deal. And the Bears are coming off a pretty big win in Las Vegas. And they got in a quarterback. You know, they got their quarterback of the future, and he's in the lineup. And this is what we're going to find out a lot about him, I think, this week.
It's time to develop, and think if you're Justin Fields, kind of grow up quickly in this league, because here comes a Packers defense that has gotten a lot better from where it started. Now, to be fair,
it has.
It couldn't have gotten much worse. It had to go some way, and it only went the way it could. I mean, when you start rock bottom, you can only go up.
Yeah, for sure. Certainly from that first game. But, you know, what's interesting to me, I mean, I was really down on the scheme, and the more I see it, the more I'm starting to like it. I think I like the way that he uses inside linebackers. I like the way that he wants a lot of guys up at the line of scrimmage to stop the run first. That was never a Patton thing. Mike Patton was always, don't let anything happen down the field. And then stuff would happen down the field, and they'd let guys run.
It's a lot quicker to fly to Miami
than
to drive there,
right,
is what Mike Patton
would
say.
Or walk there, yeah. And I think Barry is serious about stopping the run. I think that's his number one goal. And at the same time, they don't give up a lot of big, long plays. Now, the Ja'Marr Chase play at the end of the half was – they at least had it covered, you know. If Darnell Savage makes the play, then they don't give up a 70-yard touchdown. But he was at least covered.
What'd you make of the explanation of that play where they basically got duped?
I saw it. I looked it on tape, and I listened really closely. So supposedly the outside linebackers heard a check that doesn't exist in the offense that the Bengals run. So it exists in the Packers offense, so they're used to, when they hear it from the offense, they were thinking, oh, we think we know what's coming. It's going to be one of these. My guess is they thought it was going to be a lateral play, you know, one of those. So they're going to drop off. But it didn't exist. I don't know where they heard it, and to this day we still don't know where they heard it. But, boy, that really killed them.
Teaches you not to guess. Now, going back to the scheme, I think it's been fascinating that they've been able to do something that Mike Patton never did. They played a lot of that third defensive lineman, and they've gone jumbo up front while maintaining the athleticism on the back end. They've kind of had that dime look with an extra defensive lineman, and they've only had one inside linebacker, and they've dropped the defensive backs, kind of ensuring that you have the extra athleticism on the back end to cover the pass, but you've got the big guys up front to help with the run. I think when you look at that schematically, and then the fact that Kenny Clark's playing so well and Devondre Campbell's playing so well, when's the last time that you've seen a Packers defense that can be dominant from the middle, from the inside?
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny you say that, but to me, what they've done and what this defense does is takes away that outside zone and forces it inside, because you'll see those sometimes they put Campbell, the inside linebacker, and Oren Burks on the outside. They're forcing everything inside. And they're making it so that those outside zones that Matt LaFleur and all his buddies like to run is not as effective. And so I think that's been a really nice piece of their defense. Teams are going to adjust. They're just seeing the Barry defense, for sure. But for right now, he's catching up to them. He is caught up to them.
Never a bad thing to funnel things to Kenny Clark, huh?
No, boy, he's playing well. Dean Lowry played finally showed up. I mean, he played his butt off against Cincinnati. He was dominating that, albeit a very bad right guard. And even Kingsley Keke showed up a little bit.
Aaron Rodgers was asked this week to name the, 16 starting quarterbacks that he has gone against in his time. And the man with the best recall in the NFL got through four.
I'm telling you, he could have
done that. I would think so.
I'm sure he could have. But all he needs is that kind of bulletin board material in Chicago that, you know, look, Aaron Rodgers thinks he can beat anybody we throw out there, you know, or whatever. I think he's smart enough to know that was a trap question, you know, like, don't even get into it.
He could have gotten into more than four. The quarterback play has been so bad in Chicago for so long, and it's been mediocre at best for so long. And along comes the 11th overall pick in the draft from last year, Justin Fields, who has showed some moments. He had a very good game for a rookie on the road at Las Vegas, 91.9 passer rating. But as a whole this season has been very, very up and down. What do you make of Justin Fields?
Well, he's not Mitch Trubisky, which, you know, everybody's job is on the line in Chicago with Justin Fields. I mean, let's face it. I'm surprised they made it. Pace and Nagy made it through this year. Excuse me. But Justin Fields, everything's riding on the poor kid. He better come through or a lot of guys are losing their jobs. And he's athletic and he's got a lot of potential, but he's a rookie. And I sort of liken him to Trey Lance in San Francisco. It's going to take some time. I don't know if he's Kyler Murray where he can come in and have an impact right away. This will be a big game for him. I mean, if he pulls a victory out here, that's huge for him and for the Bears.
That's how legacies perhaps get started
sometimes. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It takes something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the difference with Trey Lance and Justin Fields is that in San Francisco, they've held pretty firm to Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right.
He's the starter. Chicago's already turned that page, and they've gone with Justin Fields now in perpetuity. Obviously, Andy Dalton in the beginning of the season had some injury issues, but now it's just Justin Fields' show. Did that surprise you at all that they didn't hold on longer and postpone Justin Fields' debut, let him develop a little bit more?
Only because, you know, Dalton was hurt, and they were sort of forced to play him, and then it's like, okay, well, we played him. I mean, he had that disastrous game where he was sacked 17 times or whatever it was. But I think they saw something there, and they were like, hey, you know, at some point you got to go with the guy that you're going to go with the rest of your, you know, you've put all your chips in. And I think the one thing that they've done smartly was even without David Montgomery, their top running back, you know, they still ran the ball against the Raiders. And you got to run the ball when you got a rookie quarterback like that. You got to do something to keep the heat off him.
We mentioned the Packers still staying in that nickel look with the five DBs. How do you think they match up this week? Because Eric Stokes, Chandon Sullivan inside, but I think they feel pretty comfortable with Chandon Sullivan inside. Big question mark on the opposite perimeter. Jair Alexander is still on IR. Kevin King sure doesn't look. He did not practice again on Thursday. Sure does not look like he's going to be able to go. What do they do there?
Well, I think they put Stokes on Mooney, and then they just double Allen Robinson the best they can. I think, you know, it's probably going to be Isaac Yiadom at corner. I don't think Kevin King's playing. I can't imagine. He didn't practice Wednesday, didn't practice Thursday. I was watching the game the other day, and when Matt LaFleur said he was playing one-armed, he was. You could just see he was like holding his arm. So he's not playing. So they're going to have to do a heck of a lot of doubling on one of those two receivers. But I would put Stokes on Mooney, because Mooney's the deep guy, and Stokes has shown he can run with anybody.
I asked Matt LaFleur today about Kevin King if it was a pain management thing or something that, you know, you're just going to be really precautious because it's a shoulder for Kevin King. He's had that a lot. It's a long history of shoulder issues that he has. Yes. I thought his answer was pretty revealing in that he made it very, very clear that if he doesn't play this week, it's not because he's not tough enough. I mean, he's almost like paving the way for, it's not a pain management thing, it's that he can't go. Don't question this guy's toughness.
It's also like, oh, you mean he's going on IR? You know, that's what they always do. You know, it seems like, oh yeah, well, we're giving him till Sunday to figure it out, and then on Saturday they put him on IR. So I don't think Kevin King's playing this week. And you know, they signed Rasul Douglas last week, and then they picked up Quinn Dunbar, signed him this week. Basically, they have three Isaac Yadams on the roster now, you know, and somehow they got to figure out how to make that work.
You hope one of the three hit.
Yeah.
Any guesses on who exactly that might be? Who do you think's most prepared? Obviously, Douglas and Dunbar got in later, and Yadam's been here longer. But
Yadam, I think, will start. Of the three, I think Douglas maybe has the most potential. He's a big corner that, you know, maybe you can get away with him being physical at the line and then doubling behind him. I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see. I don't think, you know, they still have the option of using Chan and Sullivan out there. They didn't really do that when King got hurt. You know, they tried to use Jean Charles a little bit in the dime. And after Joe Mixon left his jock at the 8-yard line, we didn't see too much of
him. No, that was quite an ankle breaker there.
Yeah, so, I think they'll go with that. I think they'll play a lot of zone, they'll make Fields dink and dunk it down the field. They're just going to not let him go deep. If he can do a 15-play drive, then they'll be happy with that.
I think in Chicago there's going to be a lot of intrigue with Justin Fields' debut against the Packers and that side of the ball when it's on the field. In Green Bay, it's kind of the opposite. I mean, the intriguing matchup for me in this game is this Packers offense that is trying to – it sounds kind of, you know, – they're 4-1, and Matt LaFleur was pretty chippy about this idea, but in a lot of ways they're kind of trying to right the ship. I mean, they're trying to get back on course because 2020, this has been not. This has not been what the standard was last year. It's not been bad. It's just not been that.
Right.
And they're doing it this week against a Bears defense that is phenomenal. I mean, you talk about the Chicago Bears, it's like they have the same team every year. Big quarterback question, awesome defense. And here you go again with the Bears defense that's 8th in yards, 7th in points. That Packers offense trying to right the ship against that Bears defense, that's going to be really fascinating to see.
And doing it without Akeem Hicks, who's been out, I think, since week one, or he's been out a while. Khalil Mack is back to being who he was. Khalil Mack was kind of not really on top of his game last year. And, you know, he's just a game breaker. You know, a guy like that. And Robert Quinn's tough. This is where they need Elton Jenkins back in a big way. And they'll still probably have to help Elton Jenkins or whoever, wherever Mack lines up, they gotta help.
Yeah, Akeem Hicks has not played since week three against Cleveland.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's a diminished Bears defensive front on paper, but not in production. A lot of attention is going to be paid this week to what the Packers offense does in the red zone. They were the best ever since it goes back to 2003, since data has been tabulated on red zone offense and touchdown scoring success. 76% was the best that has ever been calculated in 2020. They're sixth worst in the league this year, around 55%. A massive plummet. I'm sure, Tom, that there's more to it than just this. But when you have a receiver and tight end that tie franchise records for scoring for their positions in the same season, which Davante Adams with 18 and Robert Tonyan with 11 did last year, they combined for 29. 21 of those came inside the red zone. All but four came within 25 yards. And then they only have three touchdowns this season through five games. like Aaron Rodgers said yesterday, that is the biggest reason. I mean, that is huge. They have got to – Davante Adams leads the league in catches, leads the league in receiving yards. They've got to have both of those guys get into the end zone.
Yeah, I think what we've seen quite possibly is that with Elgton Jenkins gone or out, they've had to help out Josh Naaman quite a bit. And doing that takes away from your offense. It means your tight end's got a chip. They got to hold, you know, double team. I think that's taken Robert Tonyan out of the offense. Everything he's gotten has been pretty short. Most of his passes, he had the one touchdown down the middle. They need more of that. And, you know, they talked about being more aggressive. And I don't know if that's the right word. I think the right word is creative. You know, it's like, okay, I got no problem with them running it the first two downs, but then come up with a play, you know, some kind of play action play that takes advantage of the fact that you ran it the first time. Don't always focus on Randall Cobb, you know, on these third downs. They seem to go to Randall Cobb on third down almost every time. So I think it means being creative, creating some plays for Allen Lazard, you know, where you can get a matchup you like, or Tonyan, or Mercedes Lewis. How about releasing him in the end zone, you know?
Like they did near the 50-yard line.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think they just kind of got stale, and I think the best thing for them is that they recognized it.
I think even Aaron Rodgers knew when he said aggressive that it wasn't the right word, because he said that he quickly qualified and said, not saying you need to throw it more. It is more of a creative. And I think that, Tom, you and I were on the same page with – it wasn't a bad call to run it inside the 10-yard line. I mean, look, Aaron Jones last week had 14 carries for 103 yards. Yes, 57 of those came on one carry. That's still a plus 5 yard per game average, even if you take the other 13 carries.
The guy was running it too.
He was. So running the ball is not the wrong call. That's something that this offense, we've talked a lot about, this offense needs to continue to do. It's just, they, you know, when what we're seeing in the red zone is – defenses are taking away Davante Adams like they've never. They are solely focused on him. Robert Tonyan's being taken away by the offensive line injuries, and until that changes, you've got Aaron Rodgers working off his third option.
Yeah, and I think what the Bears are going to do, I think they're going to be far more concerned with Davante Adams than Cincinnati was, and because they can rely on their front four to play run defense. Their run defense is really good. I was just looking back, and the only team that's rushed for over 4 yards is Cleveland, which has probably the best run game in the NFL. So I think that that's going to be a real key, is that they will take Adams out, and they'll still be able to play the run. So where do the Packers go from there? That's going to be the question.
And it's going to be very interesting to see how patient Matt LaFleur is with that run game, because this is going to be a big run week. They're going to have to run. They're going to go against Tuchel. They're going to need to run them out of Tuchel.
Yeah.
And if Matt LaFleur's, you know, back to Robert Tonyan, 17 targets through 5 games this year, 20 targets through 5 games last year. That might sound somewhat even, but I don't think that the plan after his big breakout season was to have fewer targets in the first 5 games than he had a year ago.
No.
It's to build off of that. Is it just a matter of the offensive line? Is there anything else there that you see? Do you expect him to be able to recover from that?
I think Randall Cobb takes away from Robert Tonyan. I think Rodgers, that's his security blanket. And on third downs, instead of Robert Tonyan being his security blanket, Randall Cobb is. So I think that's part of it. I also think that Robert Tonyan has to chip way too much. And I actually think Robert Tonyan is more effective, and this is just anecdotal from my point, I don't have any evidence of this, but it seems to me like he's more effective when he's in line than when he's out, spread out. You know, he's so good right off the line of scrimmage, and then in tight quarters, his hands are so good. I think they have to figure out a way to get him out on routes from there. And especially in the red zone.
That's really fascinating, too, because he's a move guy. Like, he's got the athleticism. He's a former receiver. Yeah. He had to learn how to play in line. He went right. from quarterback to receiver, can make all these great catches at Indiana State, had no idea how to block. And now he's progressed to the point where maybe it is time for him to be, you know, really be centered in line instead of being the move guy.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, a lot of times they put him out wide because they're setting something else up. And, you know, they want to see how the defense reacts to it. Does he pull a linebacker out there or a safety or a corner or what? So, I mean, that's an effective way to use him. But, you know, I think once Elton Jenkins comes back, I mean, he still will have to do some chipping, but I think we might see a little bit more of Tanyan.
Let's talk about Elton Jenkins coming back, because it sure looks like Elton Jenkins is coming back. I was surprised that he didn't play in Cincinnati.
I was too, yeah.
Basically, they kind of wasted a roster spot. I mean, he missed three games. That's a short-term IR stint. He did practice last week, but when you look at it, I thought that he was going to play in Cincinnati. I do think, though, that it's pretty advantageous that it didn't cost him a win. They were able to win. They were able to rest him an extra week. And I'd be shocked if he didn't play this week against Chicago. It just looks like he's on track to play.
Yeah, the difference being that last week he practiced on Thursday, I think, and not Wednesday, right? And then this week he's practiced Wednesday and Thursday, and I suspect he'll go tomorrow. So I would anticipate him playing. And then the question is, where do you put him? But I absolutely think he's going to be a left tackle, don't you?
I think that we're on the same page there. Yeah, and I think that at the end of the day, what did we just talk about with Robert Tonyan and the offensive line, the injuries kind of limiting his role? That's to help chip block. That's to help Josh Nyman, who's done yeoman's work. Not a lot of teams have a third-string left tackle like Josh Nyman. But it's still, you're truncating your offense. You're adjusting it in a way that you don't have to if you have Elton Jenkins at left tackle.
Right, and you're talking about playing Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn. This is not a bunch of slouches that, you know, you can get away with. Like I said, Elton Jenkins probably will need help. Probably not as often, but he's going to need some help too. And I wouldn't be surprised if he gives up a sack or two. You know, he's probably not 100%, but he still gives you so much. You know, he's so talented that, you know, they get him back, that means a lot.
To be fair, the Packers have gone without Elton Jenkins against Nick Bosa. And they went against T.J. Watt without him as well.
Right,
so,
right. But look at their total, their offensive totals. Not great.
And they've had to, even doing that, they've had to really scale back what they do, especially from the tight end position. So, I think Elton Jenkins, I do think he's going to come back. I think that he'll be left tackle, which will leave you John Runyon Jr. at left guard. And I believe the plan was always for Josh Myers to miss one game with the finger injury and come back. He's been practicing. So I think he's back to center.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Royce Newman, who's played a pretty good right guard, and obviously right tackle Billy Turner has been the rock of that offensive line. That leaves out a guy. And next week, David Bakhtiari is eligible to come back from and be activated from the PUP. Do you think that happens?
I think he will practice right away. I don't see why they would wait. So he is 10 months from surgery. I believe he may be 10 months by now.
It was the first week of January.
Right. So he should be
January 7th or around that date.
Yeah, and that's usually the marker. But let's say they want to go 11 months. He could still start practicing now. And then they play him, you know, maybe in, I can't even remember their schedule, but they got this game, they got
Washington next week.
Washington, at home. Arizona. You know, Arizona. They could wait till Kansas City before they start him.
You don't think they'd want to get him at Arizona? That's going to be a pretty big game.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, that's a possibility. I just don't, as much as I, in my mind, I'm like, they could roll him out right away and he'd be ready to play. I don't know. I just think they're going to be kind of careful with it.
the one thing about if they did do Arizona, that's a Thursday night game. That's a short week.
Yeah.
On the West Coast.
But would be okay for him, right?
Because then he's got a lot of time.
10 days after to recover from it.
That's a good point.
So maybe Arizona is the day.
Coming out of that game. And it's not like he's on a short week.
Yeah.
You know,
like, no.
He hasn't played since January.
He's on a long week.
He's on long, many months. Yeah. So.
But, you know, they are getting healthier. Dominique Daphne is practicing this week, could be back this week. MVS is eligible to return next week, and Rogers said they were hopeful to get him back next week. So, aside from Za'Darius Smith and Jair Alexander,
maybe Kevin
two
King.
Pretty key, yeah. But I guess from really key guys, they're getting healthier.
The offensive line is definitely getting healthier. You know, MVS coming back is going to be huge for this offense too. It just seems like they need another guy, and he can be that other guy.
He can. I mean, he wasn't having that much of an impact, but he was close.
It wasn't on him though. Look at the Detroit game week two. He runs by the DB three times, and Rodgers misses him three times. He took ownership of those misses too. I mean, what else do you want the guy to do?
Right, and I think he was having an impact. I think it just. He's definitely always creating some sort of bad mismatch in the secondary, especially when teams are trying to double Adams.
So this is going to be a fascinating week. I'm very curious, kind of similar to last week when we were how good are the Bengals? I'm curious to see how good are the Bears. This is kind of a measuring stick for Chicago. Obviously, like we said, young quarterback, but you know, can they be a player in this division or not? That answer is about to get underway. We got to talk about the special teams because they were eventful in Cincinnati, and we've talked with Matt LaFleur about they adjusted the protection after two straight weeks against Pittsburgh and San Francisco of almost having a field goal blocked from the right side. Took two guys off. They put Jake Hansen and Ben Braden off the practice squad in it. On the right side of their protect, and it worked out pretty well. The protection was not the issue. What did you see as the issue when you went back and looked at the film?
To me, and I'm very curious to hear what Mo Drayton has to say, but almost every miss had something different about it. The one with 2 minutes and 12 seconds left looked like just a terrible snap. I think the laces were facing the Horquez. You know, he couldn't get him around in time, and it just hooked. And you could see that Crosby was really ticked when he heard that. I think because he goes up, and Bohorquez, I think, told him, hey, the laces were the wrong way. And he's like, what? And he was screaming at, I don't know, somebody. Another time, Bohorquez had to spin the laces. That I think that was in overtime. That could have been a factor. Another, I think he just missed. I think he just judged it wrong, you know, just based on his body language, he judged it wrong. So I think there was kind of a perfect storm of things going on. I don't think it was one issue each time.
It's like Matt LaFleur said, you can't put it all on Mason Crosby.
Right, but you can put some of it.
Some of it, though.
Yeah, and you know, good kickers, and he is a good kicker. If the laces aren't right, you find a way to get it through in clutch situations, and he just didn't. So I don't think it's a crisis. People wanted to cut him on Monday, and you know,
which is
stupid.
That's so fascinating because the guy also made the game-winning kick, his second in 3 weeks. So I'm not saying that the three that he missed before that didn't happen, but he also made the game winner. That's a good thing. So it was just such a bizarre day for him, and I think it goes down to good kickers can have bad days. I don't think there's any question that he's going to be able to respond from this. He's shown that over and over in his career. It'd be a big surprise if he didn't. I think a big question, though, is whenever Corey Bohorquez has been a revelation at punter. He's been the best punter since when that you've seen on the Packers beat. When's the last time they had a punter like this?
Kind of like John Ryan, maybe.
Yeah, so it's been over a decade. But anytime you're changing the field goal battery at the beginning of the season, there's going to be maybe some hiccups, and I think that what you've seen is some hiccups, things that they can for sure iron out by the end of the season when it counts the most, but they're ironing some things out with the battery right now.
Yeah, they are. And Crosby was used to J.K. Scott holding for 3 years or two plus years. So it does take a little bit of time. And I'm not even sure that how much the operation was a factor. It was a factor on a couple of the kicks and not a couple of the kicks. I mean, he did make some field goals in that game too. So it's really, you got to look at it over the long run, and they won the game. So if he misses three field goals this week, then they got a problem.
Then they got a problem. Well, we will see if they've got a problem, and we'll see if the Packers can take care of business in Chicago, like I think you and I and a lot of people expect them to be able to do, and go to 5-1 with a five-game winning streak and really assert themselves atop this NFC North. A lot of questions going to be answered this week, so make sure that you stick to PackersNews.com for all the answers we can provide, full coverage of the rivalry week, Packers at Chicago. And until then, he's Tom, I'm Ryan. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening.